This is a special broadcast from Free Speech Radio News for Memorial Day 2008.
I'll never forget this. There was a very young PFC, I believe. He was standing in the back of the pickup truck. And as they rolled by, he lifted one of the decapitated heads in front of me. And he basically said, "We really screwed these guys up, didn't we?"
So we're telling the stories that are hard to tell, but they're also the stories that are hard to hear. And in having the courage to face up to these as participants, we hope that as listeners, you have the courage to face up to your complicity.
In March 2008, hundreds of Iraq and Afghanistan war veterans gathered outside Washington, D.C. to talk about what they saw and did in combat. Over 4 days of gripping testimony, the veterans argued that high-profile atrocities like the torture of prisoners inside Abu Ghraib and the massacre of 24 innocent civilians at Haditha are not isolated incidents perpetuated by a few bad apples, but part of a pattern of increasingly bloody occupations. They also argued, by relating their firsthand experiences, how the military occupation of a foreign country inevitably leads to an increase in racism, dehumanization, sexism directed toward the enemy and within the soul of the service member. Members of Iraq Veterans Against the War also spoke of the difficulties veterans are having obtaining proper medical care and the methods they're using to fight back. Today, we present Winter Soldier, Iraq and Afghanistan, Eyewitness Accounts of the Occupations, produced by Aaron Glantz and Esther Mania, and presented by Aaron Glantz. It's Memorial Day 2008. I'm Aura Bogado. Stay with us.
I was a great soldier once upon a time, and now I stand here to fight for my brothers more than I ever could while I wore a uniform.
I just want to say that I am sorry for the hate and destruction that I have inflicted on innocent people, and I'm sorry for the hate and destruction that others have inflicted on innocent people. At one point, it was okay, but reality has shown that is not, and that this is happening, and that until people hear about what is going on with this war, it will continue to happen and people will continue to die. I am sorry for the things that I did. I am no longer the monster that I once was. Thank you.
You know, our military is a military of obedience. It's not a military of ethical or moral choices. And it's a military of obedience. You're taught exactly how to react to the situations. You're put in those situations, and then you react. And you follow the obedience of our higher-ups. And what we're doing here is we're breaking that tradition. We're saying, you know what? No, I have the moral responsibility to really think about why I'm here and what I'm here for.
These events happen in our name, and each and every single one of you are responsible for this as well. I am very sorry for my actions, and I can't take back what I did. I ask the forgiveness of the people of Iraq and of my country, and I will not enable this any further.
In 1776, the United States was on the verge of losing the War of Independence. George Washington's troops had suffered a string of defeats and had to retreat to Valley Forge, Pennsylvania, where they suffered through a brutally cold winter. Some soldiers starved and many talked about deserting, but the great revolutionary Thomas Paine rallied the troops. "These are the times that try men's souls," Paine wrote. "The summer soldier and the sunshine patriot will, in this crisis, shrink from their service of their country. But he that stands by it now deserves the love and thanks of man and woman. Tyranny, like hell, is not easily conquered. Yet we have this consolation with us, that the harder the conflict, the more glorious the triumph." Members of Iraq Veterans Against the War said they were showing that kind of courage when they gathered in March 2008 to talk about what they saw and did while deployed overseas. They called the event Winter Soldier Iraq and Afghanistan, Eyewitness Accounts of the Occupations. Their inspiration came from a 1971 event called Winter Soldier, which was organized by Vietnam veterans against the war.
My name is Kelly Doherty. I'm the executive director and a co-founder of Iraq Veterans Against the War. I served for 8 years in the Colorado Army National Guard as both a medic and military police. And the reason why I became involved in this movement to end the occupation was because of my firsthand experience in the military and in Iraq, and seeing the destruction of the country of Iraq and the damage it was causing to the people there, and also what it was doing to the military and to the men and women that I was serving with. And, you know, I felt there was a responsibility that I had to try to do something to help change the situation and help end the occupation. And all of us who've come to Iraq Veterans Against the War, it's been because of something very personal. It's been because we've been transformed in our own lives and feel like we have a responsibility to continue fighting, whether or not we're in the military, to uphold values that we took very seriously when we enlisted or that came to be very important to us through our service. Winter soldiers, according to Thomas Paine, are those Americans who stand up for the soul of their nation in its darkest times. And we're carrying on a legacy of hundreds of years of veterans and soldiers speaking out and resisting against policies that are unjust and that damage the military and damage humanity.
The veterans who testified at Winter Soldier said they were compelled to speak out by the same patriotic duty that led them to join the military. Garrett Rappenhagen joined Iraq Veterans Against the War while serving as a cavalry scout sniper in Bakuba in 2004 and 2005.
The men I served with were honorable soldiers. They were professionals. They went to Iraq hoping to do good, hoping to do right. They went to Iraq to defend their country, to defend their neighbors, and defend their citizens. However, we found rapidly that that was not the case, that we were killing the Iraqi people in horrible ways, and we had to. We had to do it to protect ourselves and to operate our missions in the most safety that we could possibly do it.
Good afternoon. My name is John Michael Turner. I currently reside in Burlington, Vermont. I served with Kilo Company, 3rd Battalion, 8th Marines as an automatic machine gunner. I served 3 deployments with Kilo Company, 3rd Battalion, 8th Marines, one of which was in Haiti. The other 2 were in Iraq, in between Fallujah and Abu Ghraib the first time, and in downtown Ramadi at the government center the second time.
Turner received the Purple Heart for his service in Iraq. At the Winter Soldier gathering outside Washington, D.C., he ripped the medal off his lapel and threw it into the audience.
There's a term, once a Marine, always a Marine, but there's also the term, eat the apple, F the Corps. I don't work for you no more.
Other veterans followed suit. Former Specialist Michael Totten deployed to Iraq with the 716th Military Police Battalion, 101st Airborne Brigade, from April 2003 until April 2004. At Winter Soldier, he ripped in 4 the citation for a Bronze Star that had been pinned on him by General David Petraeus.
General Petraeus, you may not remember me, but you once led me. You're no longer a leader of men. You've exploited your troops for your own gain and have become just another cheerleader for this occupation policy that is destroying America.
What makes a soldier rip off their medals or tear their citations in half? Specialist Michael Totten received his Bronze Star for valor after surviving an October 16, 2003 ambush, which left 2 members of his unit dead. One of them, Sergeant Sean Greeley, died in his arms. The citation he ripped reads in part, "Totten's team engaged enemy forces without regard for their personal safety, thereby removing the threat to women and children throughout the community." The citation continues, "Totten repeatedly exposed himself to enemy fire as his unit restored order and control back to the region while saving countless lives." At Winter Soldier, Totten described what happened the night after that event at the prison he was guarding in the southern Iraqi city Karbala. He said the Iraqi police brought 6 Iraqis suspected of taking part in the ambush into the prison and turned them over to the U.S. military.
I grabbed the man by the jaw and I looked him in the eye. And I slammed his head up against the wall. And I looked him again in the eye and said, "You must have been the one that killed Grilly." And then he fell, I kicked him. An Iraqi policeman, probably the size of the biggest security man here, with hands to match the size of a Kodiak, hit a guy in the side of the head like about 6 times, and I thought to myself, I'm looking at him and I laughed, and I'm like, yeah, these guys are getting what they deserve. This all took place also in the presence of a lieutenant, my lieutenant, within earshot of many NCOs. I never found out what happened to these people, these 6 prisoners. I don't know where they went. I don't know anything about that. My being up here displays my anger, both by on multiple levels, by the Americans' behavior overseas, by our president's continuous rhetoric about Iraq being a success, about this country's citizens and apathy to this occupation. And this is why I'm here today as well. These events happen in our name, and each and every single one of you are responsible for this as well.
Two sentiments dominated the testimony of veterans who spoke at Winter Soldier. The first was guilt. Guilt for surviving when their comrades had died. Guilt for killing civilians or for witnessing others kill civilians and failing to stop it. The second was anger. Anger at the American people for staying silent while the occupations continue. Anger at commanding officers for perpetuating a culture of lawlessness. And anger at the Bush administration and Congress for sending them to fight in an occupation where every civilian could also be an insurgent. Marine Corps veteran John Turner, after ripping off his Purple Heart and throwing it to the ground.
On April 18th, 2006, I had my first confirmed kill. This man was innocent. I don't know his name. I called him the Fat Man. He was walking back to his house, and I shot him in front of his friend and his father. The first round didn't kill him after I had hit him up here in his neck area. And afterwards, he started screaming and looked right into my eyes. So I looked at my friend who I was on post with, and I said, well, I can't let that happen. So I took another shot and took him out. He was then carried away by the rest of his family. It took 7 people to carry his body away. We were all congratulated after we had our first kills, and that happened to have been mine. My company commander personally congratulated me, as he did everyone else in our company. This is the same individual who had stated that whoever gets their first kill by stabbing them to death will get a 4-day pass when we return from Iraq.
At the conclusion of his testimony, which featured photographs of people he had killed and mosques he helped destroy, Turner offered this apology to an audience of his fellow veterans.
I just want to say that I am sorry for the hate and destruction that I have inflicted on innocent people, and I'm sorry for the hate and destruction that others have inflicted on innocent people. At one point, it was okay, but reality has shown that it is not, and that this is happening, and that until people hear about what is going on with this war, it will continue to happen, and people will continue to die. I am sorry for the things that I did. I am no longer the monster that I once was. Thank you.
John Turner and Michael Totten's remarks were typical of the testimony presented at Winter Soldier. Over 4 days, 60 veterans sat on a dais at the front of a large hall at the National Labor College in Silver Spring, Maryland, and described the grim realities of the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan. Here are some of their voices.
I'll never forget this. There was a very young PFC, I believe. He was standing in the back of the pickup truck. And as they rolled by, he lifted one of the decapitated heads in front of me. And he basically said, we really screwed these guys up, didn't we?
And I looked at my sergeant and I was like, Sergeant, these aren't the men that we're looking for. And he told me, don't worry. I'm sure they would have done something anyways. And this mother, all the while, is crying in my face, trying to kiss my feet. And, you know, I can't speak Arabic. I can speak human. She was saying, please, why are you taking my sons? They have done nothing wrong. It made me feel very powerless.
The last and possibly the most disturbing of what took place in Iraq was the mishandling of the dead. On several occasions, our convoy came across bodies that had been decapitated and were lying on the side of the road. When encountering these bodies, standard procedure was to run over the corpses, sometimes even stopping and taking pictures with these bodies, which was also standard practice whenever we encountered the dead.
I'll never forget the things that happened over there. I think about them every day, and I hope wholeheartedly that the American people can understand the impact this occupation is having on the United States military. And I hope that people really wish to educate themselves about the true nature of combat in Iraq and the effect it has on our military, because, I mean, it's tearing us apart. And I'd just like to say, you know, to those who would judge me for coming up here and sharing my experiences with the American people, do so, because I've made my peace with what I have to do for this country over many sleepless nights.
You're listening to a Memorial Day documentary on Free Speech Radio News, Winter Soldier, Iraq and Afghanistan, Eyewitness Accounts of the Occupations, produced by Aaron Glantz and Esther Mania, and presented by Aaron Glantz. Stay with us.
There's those thinking more, less is more. But if less is more, how you keeping score? It means for every point you make, your level drops. Kinda like you're starting from the top, and you can't do that. Society, you're a crazy breed. I hope you're not lonely without me. Society, crazy indeed. I hope you're not lonely without me. Society.
Michael Preisner served a tour in Iraq with the U.S. Army's 10th Mountain Division, 173rd Airborne Brigade, from March 2003 until April 2004. While deployed, he took part in numerous house raids, including one mission where his unit forced Iraqis out of a half dozen homes with no compensation, so the U.S. military could use them. One family in particular, he said, was made up of a woman with two small girls, a very elderly man, and two middle-aged men. He said, "We dragged them from their houses and threw them onto the street and arrested the men because they refused to leave."
"We were told we were fighting terrorists. The real terrorist was me, and the real terrorism is this occupation. Racism within the military has long been an important tool to justify the destruction and occupation of another country. It has long been used to justify the killing, subjugation, and torture of another people. Racism is a vital weapon employed by this government. It is more important weapon than a rifle, a tank, a bomber, or a battleship. It is more destructive than an artillery shell, or a bunker buster, or a Tomahawk missile."
Since returning from Iraq, Michael Preisner said he's been plagued by guilt.
"And I tried hard to be proud of my service, but all I could feel was shame. And racism could no longer mask the reality of the occupation. These were people, these were human beings. I've since been plagued by guilt anytime I see an elderly man, like the one who couldn't walk, who he rolled onto his stretcher and told the Iraqi police to take him away. I feel guilt anytime I see a mother with her children, like the one who cried hysterically and scream that we are worse than Saddam as we forced her from her home. I feel guilt anytime I see a young girl, like the one I grabbed by the arm and dragged into the street."
According to the RAND Corporation, more than 300,000 Iraq and Afghanistan veterans suffer from post-traumatic stress disorder or major depression, psychological injuries linked to their wartime service. Sergeant Christopher Goldsmith attempted suicide after being ordered on his second deployment to Iraq.
"I was eventually removed from the military on a general discharge. My DD-214 says in nice big bold letters, 'Misconduct, serious offense.' I committed a serious offense by trying to kill myself because I was so damaged by the occupation in Iraq. So I lost my college benefits. When I came home from Iraq, all I did was drink. I'm a severe alcoholic, and so was just about everybody who lived in the barracks with me. Well, I wanted to black out. I was self-medicating because we were told that if we were to seek mental health, we would be locked away. If I admitted that I had severe chronic depression, if I thought I had PTSD or anything like that, my career could have been ruined. My money is disappearing. Between VA visits and personal instability, I've found it extremely hard to find a job. So I deliver pizzas on Wednesdays. That's what I am now, a pizza delivery boy. I was a very good soldier.
Some soldiers link the dehumanization process to military training itself. In his book on killing, the noted psychologist and retired Army Lieutenant Colonel David Grossman wrote, "The method used to train today's Army and Marine Corps soldiers is nothing more than an application of conditioning techniques to develop a reflexive, quick-shoot ability. Instead of lying prone on a grassy field, calmly shooting at bullseye targets," Grossman wrote, "the modern soldier spends many hours standing in a foxhole, with full combat equipment draped about his body, looking over an area of lightly wooded rolling terrain. At periodic intervals, one or two olive-drab man-shaped targets at varying vantages will pop up in front of him for a brief time, and the soldier will instantly aim and shoot at the targets."
I want people to know that the dehumanization and the disrespect and the humiliation that we are bestowing upon the people of Iraq does not begin in Iraq.
Former Staff Sergeant Camilo Mejia is chair of the board of Iraq Veterans Against the War.
It's not the result. It's not the result of people waking up one morning as monsters, but it's part of the culture. It's part of the military culture. They train us that way, and given the environment that we find ourselves in, all kinds of things that under normal circumstances would seem impermissible and objectionable become basically the norm. It's almost impossible to act upon your morality in a situation like that when you have been fed all this information that, you know, these people are out there to kill you. And what you do is you basically remove the humanity from them to make it easier to oppress them, to brutalize them, to beat them. And in doing so, you remove the humanity from yourself because you cannot act as a human being and do all of these things. One last incident that I want to talk about was the first time that I opened fire on a human being. They were throwing grenades at us, and they said, you know, if anybody throws a grenade, you know, you open fire on them. So we saw this coming, and I saw this young man, basically, you know, his arm was swinging, and he had a black object in his hand, which was indeed a grenade. And I remember seeing all of this through the rear aperture of my M16 rifle sight. And I remember when we opened fire on him, we killed him. And after that incident, I remember going into a room by myself and counting the rounds that I had left in my magazine. I had fired 11 rounds at this person, and but yet I had no recollection of hitting him or him going down, him dropping, him dying. There's this blank space in my memory. There are times when it is so hard to deal with these experiences that I suppose your own body, your own psyche, in order to protect you from these memories and in order to protect you from losing your humanity, erases certain memories that are too painful to deal with, that are too overwhelming to deal with.
After serving 5 months in Iraq, Camilo Mejia deserted his unit and was sentenced to a year in prison. According to the Defense Department, more than 37,000 Americans have deserted the armed forces since October 2001. Others, like former U.S. Army medic Logan Leturi, returned from their first tour in Iraq and applied to be conscientious objectors, those who do not feel they can morally kill another human being. At Winter Soldier, Leturi linked his decision to become a conscientious objector not only to the damage the war was causing to others, but also because he felt the need to reclaim his humanity after serving in the U.S. occupation of Iraq.
The turning point for the war for me came on November 16th of 2004 in Hawija. We got a call to assist another unit that had an accident on a convoy. Vehicle had overturned over a reservoir with part water and part land. I was circling the vehicle looking for things to do when I saw a set of legs sticking out from what used to be the door to the Humvee. I checked his leg. I didn't get a response. I indicated to one of the medics I think it was a casualty and that we needed to give him attention. His response was, "He's too far gone. We need to focus on the people who have a chance." Finally, a crane came, lifted the vehicle, got the guy out that was pinned by his leg, who had morphine already injected in him, and he had a pulse. He was still alive. And I heard on the radio going back to Kirkuk that he had died before he could reach the clinic. And for some reason that struck me pretty hard. For 9 nights, I didn't sleep. I realized that there's a great possibility that he died, hearing everybody around him and knowing that nobody was coming to his aid. And then I really got disturbed when I realized, despite all the Iraqi bodies I had seen throughout Iraq, it was an American soldier that made me disturbed. And so for several months after that, and still today, I wrestle with, you know, what does that mean? That I saw all these Iraqis dead, or, you know, whatever nationals they were, but it took an American soldier, someone of my own race and creed and skin color, to wake me up out of this kind of slumber.
Former U.S. Army medic Logan Leturi. One of the final panels at Winter Soldier was titled The Breakdown of the Military. Veterans who testified on that panel spoke about the lack of proper equipment like body armor and night vision goggles, and the psychological difficulty of serving 2, 3, or 4 tours in the war zone while still keeping their ethics and morals intact. Former Wisconsin Army National Guard Sergeant Daniel Fanning drove convoys in Iraq in 2004 and 2005.
I believe a big reason why the military is breaking is because we've lost some of our best members. Not only because of the death and injuries that we've talked about, but because of those of you who are in the room today and those of us who have gotten out. Those of us who enlisted to do what was right, but wound up getting out because we were asked to do what was wrong. And there are others of you who may have, I know there's people that have different views of the war or different political viewpoints, but nobody can argue against that, the fact that we should have had better equipment and we should have better planning and we should have better preparation and that we should have better care when we get home. Those who speak against this war are not the treasonous traitors. They are the brave heroes who are honoring the commitment to this country.
Many veterans emerged from Winter Soldier transformed. For the first time since returning from Iraq or Afghanistan, they had been able to tell their stories. For 4 days in Silver Spring, Maryland, members of Iraq Veterans Against the War supported each other. By bearing their souls, these veterans sought to change both government policy and help other returning soldiers from Iraq and Afghanistan regain the humanity that they lost in the war zone. Hart Vigis served as an infantryman during the invasion of Iraq in 2003 and has since been discharged as a conscientious objector.
Instead of a soldier, I'm a soldier now, you know? I've switched it around. A soldier has put down their rifles and has picked up their souls. Instead of bullets, a soldier has their words. Instead of dogma, a soldier listens to their heart. Instead of secret codes, a soldier reflects their feelings and their thoughts. Instead of stealing land, a soldier expands the intellect. Instead of taking aim, a soldier takes reason. Instead of building fortifications that divide, a soldier grows with unity for all humankind. And that's what I feel we're doing now. Thank y'all for listening.
You've been listening to an FSRN documentary for Memorial Day 2008, Winter Soldier, Iraq and Afghanistan, Eyewitness Accounts of the Occupations, produced by Aaron Glantz and Esther Mania. Thanks today to Monica Lopez and Antonio Ortiz. You can get a copy of this broadcast by visiting our website at www.fsrn.org. This program is made possible by Pacifica Radio, community radio affiliate stations, and listener supporters. I'm Aura Bogado. Thanks for listening, and join us tomorrow when we return to our regular newscast.